Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, September 26th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll hear a selection from September's Mudroom Storytelling event. We'll find out about master planning meetings for Parks and Rec, learn how you can make artist trading cards, and we'll meet some exchange students from Palestine and Turkey. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon, currently 51 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell announced today that federal agencies plan to sign a memorandum of understanding. Jewell says the MOU will be formalized in the coming days to ensure tribal treaty rights are part of agency decision-making related to natural resources. She made the announcement before tribal leaders gathered in Washington, D.C. for the White House Tribal Nations Conference. Jewell linked the move to the Dakota Access Pipeline, which tribes across the country have joined with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in its fight against the project. The tribe says the pipeline threatens water and the environment. Jewell thanked leadership of the tribe and called for larger action.
I appreciate that the Army Corps, the Department of Justice, and the Interior Department have announced a pause while the Army thoroughly evaluates whether to reconsider any of the previous decisions made concerning that project and the Lake Oahe site near Standing Rock. But looking beyond the Dakota Access Pipeline, it's clear that there needs to be a conversation about something much larger than a single pipeline project. How a federal action impacts your land, your water, your sacred sites, your treaty rights, your sovereignty is relevant, it's important, and your voices are important.
The administration will also hold meetings with tribal leaders in October and November to examine tribal consultations on future major infrastructure projects. Today's event is President Obama's eighth and final Tribal Nations Conference. Representatives from the country's 567 federally recognized tribes were invited to take part to interact with government officials. The American Red Cross is helping residents of the Pine Ridge Reservation recover from weekend storm damage, South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Officials say nearly 20 homes were damaged in storms that brought strong winds to the region. Of the 18 homes that were damaged in the Pine Ridge Reservation community of Oglala in southwest South Dakota, most suffered minor roof and siding damage. But four homes were declared uninhabitable. The Red Cross is working with the residents of those homes to find them temporary lodging. Richard Smith with the local Red Cross office says officials will work with emergency management personnel with the Oglala Sioux Tribe to assess the situation. That will determine whether any other homes are damaged and what sort of help may be needed from local, state, and federal officials. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A bill introduced by Republican Arizona Senators John McCain and Jeff Flake would settle claims to water from the Colorado River made by the Hualapai Tribe, which reservation borders the southwestern rim of the Grand Canyon. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
The Hualapai Tribe Water Rights Settlement Act would allocate more than 1.3 billion gallons of water per year. It would allow for the construction of a 70-mile pipeline from Diamond Creek on the Colorado River to Peach Springs and the tribe-owned Grand Canyon West Resort. Hualapai Chairman Damon Clark told the Senate Indian Affairs Committee the tribe has limited and declining water resources and needs access to the river to boost employment and tourism.
We're proud of the fact that the tribe is moving forward towards achieving full employment for our members and economic self-sufficiency, but the severe lack of water on the reservation is a major obstacle in reaching these goals. Colorado River is the only feasible supply for satisfying long-term water needs of our reservation.
If the bill passes, the federal government would spend more than $170 million on the project. Officials with the Department of the Interior, however, say it's likely to exceed that estimate. The agency is also concerned that the project's costs don't justify the relatively small amount of water it would deliver. Nearly 1,800 Hualapai live on the reservation. The tribe operates the Grand Canyon Skywalk and says more than 1 million tourists visit the site every year. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the University of Tulsa College of Law's online Indian Law Master's Degree program to help you work effectively in Indian Country. Spring application deadline is December 1st. More information at 844-573-3934.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 26th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. Joining me now in the studio is Alex Pierce. She's a project manager with Parks and Rec, and Kirk Duncan, director of Parks and Rec. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's afternoon, Scott.
Yeah, nice to have you both here. So we have some meetings coming up that are designed, correct me if I'm wrong, to help sculpt the future of our city's Parks and Recreation Department.
Right. And the last time we've updated our master plan was 1997, so 20 years ago. And things have changed a little bit since then. So we're actively out seeking community involvement, community engagement. And what do you want your Parks and Rec Department to look like in the next 10 years?
All right. So the first meeting's coming up on October 5th. Looks like they're all over the community, but the first one happens to be at the UAS Glacier View Room out at the university. It's a mouthful.
Yep.
Egan 221.
Yep. And so what we're doing is we're sitting down with the community, folks that want to come out, and we're talking about what Parks and Rec looks like right now. As an example, I mean, we've got the Augustus Brown Pool. We've got the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. We've got the Treadwell Ice Arena. We do building maintenance, park maintenance, landscaping. We've got the Eagle Valley Center. We've got the Zach Gordon Youth Center. We've got the Arboretum. And what do you like about what we do? What would you like to see us do more of? What would you like to see us do less of? And so we'll be talking about that, putting things into context, and then we also have an online, we have a telephone survey going on right now, a scientifically, statistically valid telephone survey that's going on right now. People can go onto our website and take the same survey. And so we'll start getting all of this information and we'll start distilling it down into a plan. And so, Alex, you want to talk about the timeline?
Sure. So it was mentioned, we are doing public meetings in October. I have been talking to a variety of local stakeholder groups, some of our bigger Parks and Rec users, local nonprofits, other government agencies, etc., to get more of an idea of what our heavy users, collaborators, and partners would like to see. And so I'm kind of actively soliciting feedback from them, and those meetings will continue. We are launching in the next several days our online engagement opportunities, so people are able to go online, see the content of the public meetings, as Kirk mentioned, take the survey, and then our public meetings are held throughout October. And we have a lot of really great opportunities for people to not only come out and speak to us in person, but people can engage online through a service called PlaceSpeak, where they can participate in some discussion forums, drop a picture on the notice board of your favorite Parks and Rec activity, take the same survey, you can drop a pin on a map about a specific trail that you maybe have a comment on. So there's a lot of opportunities for input. After the end of October, I will be taking all of the information that we've gathered from all these great sources and distilling it down into a document called What We Heard that will come out on PlaceSpeak in December. And that will just be a comprehensive collection of all the feedback that we got available publicly, so people can really understand the context behind some of the decisions that we make as we move forward in the process. We'll come back out to the public in the spring of 2017 after having done a parks, facilities, and programs inventory. The parks inventory being the biggest part where we ask, do we have the right parks in the right places with the right equipment? And taking that information and combining it with the feedback that we got from the community, we'll have some preliminary recommendations for the public and our stakeholders to review. We'll have another series of public meetings, more opportunities to engage online, and then we'll take that information and spend the summer writing a draft plan. And the draft plan will come out in the fall of 2017 with the more global information, policy directions, maps, the whole thing. And we're targeting having the final plan adopted by the Assembly, the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee, and the Planning Commission in the spring of 2018.
Okay. Kirk, what would you say are some of the more popular facilities here in the city?
Well, certainly the Diamond Park Aquatic Center is certainly growing in popularity. We changed the pricing structure and basically got about a 40% increase in participation over there. The Treadwell Ice Arena is really enjoyed by lots and lots of folks. Trails, it's really hard to grasp how many people are using our trails, but we just know anecdotally that we're getting just a lot of folks enjoying our trails and our parks. And then we've got Eagle Valley Center, which is kind of the hidden gem of Parks and Rec. It's the old Saga Lodge out at Amalga Harbor. And we've done some remodeling out there. We can do conferences for like 20 people or group meetings for 50 people kind of thing. And, of course, the Arboretum is just a world-renowned primrose collection out there. It's just gorgeous at 23 miles. So lots and lots of really popular items in this department.
About how many folks do you have working in your department?
We have about 48 year-round full-time people, and then that grows. I mean, it's kind of hard to believe, but between games officials and everything else, we have about 300 people on the payroll. But a lot of those people are working, you know, 1 hour a week or 1 hour every other week. But it's the fun department, so we have a really really good group of people working there.
And with that diversity of facilities that you've mentioned, it seems like it would be sort of a challenge to keep them all up and in top shape. Is that true?
It is. It's a constant struggle that we work on. But again, we reallocate resources as needed, and we have some degree of flexibility. You know, we can transfer funds within the department to areas where it's needed. So I think our staff does a great job of keeping the facilities. I mean, Treadwell is known as, it's got the best sheet of ice in Alaska. I mean, the guys and gals really take a lot of pride over there. And of course, Diamond Park Aquatic Center, there's really nothing quite like it around. So it's pretty unique.
So there are these five meetings coming up. Alex, what are these going to look like? Looks like they're each about 2 hours long. How do you expect them to be formatted?
So we will have a presentation at the beginning. Kirk and I will give a bit more of an overview of what we currently do, a little bit more detail than what was just presented by Kirk right now. And then we'll have a series of boards around the room really describing what each of our facilities and programs look like. And then we're going to ask people to take a simple poll looking at the community value of each of our programs and facilities. So less about ranking them against each other. You can feel very strongly and passionately that Augustus Brown Pool is a great community asset, and also understand that Zach Gordon does really vital work in the community. And so it's less about comparing our facilities and more about thinking of the community value of each, thinking beyond your own family's needs.
Kirk, you mentioned that in 1997, that was the last time you did a master plan. So it does seem like maybe it's time, about 20 years later. What else inspired this?
Well, actually, Scott, one of the big deals is if I can't make a decision today if I don't know where I want to be in 20 years. And so it's really about what do we want the department to look like in 10 years? So the decisions we make today leads towards that. So what is the goal of the department? And I think that's just critically important. So that's basically what prompted this.
And these meetings are a way to make it democratic.
Well, yeah, I mean, because it really is, it's your community. Parks and Rec is really the quality of life. It's interesting. We're the ounce of prevention. The hour with the most police activity is the hour after school gets out. And that's true nationwide. And so in Zach Gordon, we've refocused Zach Gordon, and we have more youth engagement. So we have the after school program. We have youth employment in the parks. We've got youth outreach. So lots of different things that we're doing. So it's just getting out there, really educating the community about what we do, and then say, okay, folks, now where is the value of these various services? Where would you put the value on those?
Okay. So again, let's see, October 5th, October 10th, the 12th, the 19th, and the 20th, various locations. Where can people find this information online, Alex?
They can go to juno.org/parkrec, and we have some information up right now about the plan and the public meetings. And we will be launching PlaySpeak and our whole online presence in the next few days. So there'll be lots of great opportunities for online engagement coming later this week.
All right. Do you have a Facebook page for Parks and Rec?
We do.
Yeah. We have several.
All right.
We have several.
Mm-hmm. For probably a lot of the various facilities and departments or?
Right. The pools have one. Zach Gordon has one. Diamond Park Aquatic or Treadwell has one. Administration, the main office, has one. And unfortunately, I just haven't really got onto Facebook, but lots of other folks have.
All right, Alex Pierce, she's the project manager, and Kirk Duncan, he's the director of Parks and Rec. They will be heading up some meetings, the first of which is October 5th, 2016, here coming up from 6 to 8 at the UAS Glacier View Room, Egan 221. So check that out. Otherwise, go to the website, and you can see other meetings at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library, the Mount Jumbo Gym, Centennial Hall, Zontakini Middle School, and so forth. Thank you both for coming on the show. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Scott, thanks. Thanks for having us. And I hope the public comes out and just tells us what you want us to do over the next 10 years.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much, Scott. And I'd really just like to add that this is Juno's plan. This is your opportunity to shape the future of our department. We're not going into this with preconceived notions about what we want to see in the future. We really want to know what the community wants to see. So please, please go online, come to a meeting, make your voice heard, because this is your opportunity.
Thank you.
It's so hard to be good. I know the burden our bones bear. I know the burden our bones bear. And it breaks my heart that we've lowered our chances. Too much light out. Sky out here. What about the air keeps you breathing? What about the past keeps you? What about the end?
That is the music of Dave McGraw and Mandy Fair off their CD Off Grid Lo-Fi. They'll be playing at the Goldtown Nickelodeon on October 5th at 7 p.m. as part of the KRNN Spotlight Series. Tickets are now on sale at ktoo.org. We have a little extra time here on the show today, so I thought we could take a listen to a story from the September 2016. Just a couple weeks ago, I think it was on the 14th, the Mudrooms. The theme of Mudrooms that night was Chichaco. Here is Tana Peters' story.
I'll introduce our first speaker of the night. That is Tana Peters. Tana, known to many as TP, embraces the humor in life, which she has learned to do after logging more than 25 years of living in Alaska. A consummate crafter, she's created everything from theater sets and museum mounts to beer labels and trending hashtags. Also, for those who are following, this is her make for today. Please help me welcome Tana.
Hello. This is a story about the word Chichaco. Very shocking, I know. They sort of, riffed on my intro a little bit here, so I'm just going to ask for a second. Anyone in the audience tonight did not already know what the word Chichaco is? We got a couple. Oh, yeah. So now you know you are one. Welcome. Chichaco, as they said, is a newcomer or some kind of greenhorn, generally speaking, to Alaska. And if you are not a Chichaco, what you become is a sourdough. And according to my father, who is, of course, the ultimate on everything, he always said that you were a Chichaco until you became a sourdough, and that was A, if you were born here, or B, if you lived here 50 years. Yeah, so it takes a while. And you know when you're like walking down the street in Juneau and you see a tourist or something and they're like, oh my God, are you from here? And you're like, oh yeah. And they're like, oh, so you're born and raised. Oh, that's great. And I always have this moment where I have to be like, oh, this is super awkward. Because technically, I moved here when I was 1 year old. So I was technically not born here, but I was raised here. And I don't know if I want to have this like weird conversation with this random stranger right now about how I came up on a ferry when I was one. Anyway, it's super awkward. And technically, according to my father's definition, which I think he made only because of me, I am still a Chichaco. I have about 25 more years to go, so that's awesome. Thanks, Dad. How many people in the room, according to my father's definition, are actually a sourdough? Yeah. Good job, guys. So anyway, to my story. About 6 years ago, I was working for the Juneau Empire, probably along with everyone else who just raised their hand. And when I worked at the Juneau Empire, in fact, it was August 5th, 2010, I was a graphic designer, and also I had a little column that I wrote for them. And I did it as a freelance side gig for them, and this column was very heavy-hitting. It was really, you know, the deep linguistic sort of stuff that really Junoites love, because it was all about crafting. That's right. I'm a big crafter, and my column was kind of like the penultimate of everything. It was, you know, full of alliteration and pieces about, you know, knitting, using your arms as knitting needles, very complicated stuff. So as, you know, an Empire writer, I sometimes felt like I was not always, like, with the rest of the crew as the craft writer. And I always wanted to be as cool as everybody else, like, really, you know, stand up with them. So one day I came into work, and I checked my email, and I had a little message from a follower of my blog. Yes, that's right. I had one follower on my craft blog. Someone read my articles. I know you're all jealous right now. Anyhow, so I checked this email. I'm very excited, and it says, hey, Tana, guess what? Today, you're on dictionary.com. Dictionary.com. I was so excited. I was like, I bet none of the other writers here have ever been on dictionary.com. I have no idea what that means, but I'm excited. Immediately, I called over one of my coworkers, Katie Spielberger. Now, I don't know if you know Katie Spielberger, but she's a former Mudrooms board member, and she is the biggest word nerd I have ever met. I'm talking, this girl loves words more than anything, more than life. She wants to know about words past, words present, words future, everything about words and linguists. So I thought she might be really excited about me being on dictionary.com. So Katie came over, we go on dictionary.com. We look it up and it says, oh, there's a feature called Word of the Day. Weirdly, I had never been on before, so I didn't know about this feature. But I get on Word of the Day. Guess what the word is? Nice job. It was chuchaco. So I read the definition. It says something about a newcomer, greenhorn, blah, blah, blah. I'm scrolling through looking for my name because that's what the important part is, right? I get down there and it says, oh, I'm quoted. I'm quoted because I wrote an article, a piece. One of my column articles was about me traveling to other destinations, and it was craft encounters wherever you go. And in this piece, I talked about being a chuchaco to this place I was traveling to, and wasn't it fun to meet the new blah, blah, blah crafters, et cetera. So they had quoted me. They had me, and they had another quote from a book about a sourdough man meeting a chuchaco girl, something like that. So we were the two people they quoted, and so I'm reading through, and I'm saying, oh, yeah, greenhorn, whatever. I'm feeling great, feeling good. Katie, look at me go. And then I keep reading, and it says, you know, greenhorn, chuchaco, too, places like Alaska and Hawaii. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. I didn't know they use this word in Hawaii. In fact, that's like super weird because I thought they had another word for that in Hawaii. And it's just like super weird because I was in Hawaii when I wrote that article, so I was like traveling there, and oh, crap. Oh, crap. Yeah. I had just inadvertently, accidentally, and conclusively redefined the word chuchaco for the entire internet with my craft blog. That's right. So anyway, I was really afraid then because I was like, Katie, don't look, don't look, Katie, don't look. All my street cred was going out the window. I was super stressed about it. But as things go, Katie was like really excited about it then. She was like, you just redefined a word accidentally for the whole world. So then I was like, okay, I guess, but you know, you should really like email them and let them know, because that's like super inaccurate and totally wrong. And she was like, oh yeah, I'll take care of that. And I just looked yesterday, it's still there. Yeah, so anyhow, the moral of my story is literally never, ever believe anything that's on the internet. Do not use dictionary.com as a resource at all. And whether they're a chuchaco or a sourdough, it really doesn't matter. Always have a friend like Katie Spielberger to take your failures and turn them into successes. Thanks.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
This is Bird Note. A lot of birds are, well, small, like the banana quit, a lively little honey creeper, a bit bigger than a hummingbird, that's found across parts of Central and South America. Studying them online or in books and field guides is a good start, but seeing them in the wild, it's there where they really come alive. And that means you need binoculars or a spotting scope. Across Central and South America, conservationists, teachers, and researchers are benefiting from organizations like Birders Exchange, a program of the American Birding Association. The program collects donations of new and used binoculars, scopes, books, and tripods, and passes them on to people who are working to conserve birds and their habitats. Finding a new home for those binoculars is a win-win-win. You clear that space in your closet and know that your donation is really doing some good. The local naturalists and educators are better equipped to find work in the growing ecotourism industry. And the birds win when communities begin to value the habitat and the diversity that they depend on. And that means more land will stay natural and wild and not be cleared for farms and ranches. Learn how you can donate your binoculars. Begin at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 26th, 2016. It's about 30 minutes after the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Grace Amundson. She is the events director for the Juno Makerspace. Welcome to the show, Grace.
Thank you.
And also Sam Bornstein. He is the president of the Juno Makerspace. Welcome.
Thank you.
So it seems like, I don't know when it was, Sam, maybe a year ago we were in here talking about getting this thing off the ground.
Yeah, and now it's launched. Grand idea, and now we're here. We're plugging away here, chugging away.
All right, so Juno Makerspace, let's start with, where are you?
We're in a warehouse building out on Inca Street in Lemon Creek. You're driving out towards Costco, you hang a left there, and we're behind a blue and white warehouse. We sometimes have a sign out.
And as we were sort of talking about this before the show, it's like if you go past the coffee stand, you see Skookum mm-hmm. Recycling on your left, the car dealership on your right, but you kind of go straight lefty.
Yeah, it's I don't know, the road's just weirdly named because it's still Inca Street, and that's what you turn off of to go to Costco, but then like it crosses itself. I don't know
like
how
you're going back to El Zarape, kind of
yeah,
back in there.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's the address?
1759 Inca Street.
And what's the space itself look like?
We've got a garage space with a bunch of tools in it. That's
you've got a couple of different ceramic kilns, some stained glass supplies, a 3D printer, which I'm super excited about, and we just got a laser cutter, which is pretty awesome. Sam's been experimenting with it the last couple of days, and we just got it up and running. We've got welding equipment, woodworking stuff, stuff for bending metal plate.
Sheet metal, yeah.
Yeah, sheet metal.
So it's all sorts of tools and equipment for any sort of project you want to work on, whether it's, woodworking or electronics or ceramics.
And when was sort of your grand opening?
It was about a year ago. We've been slowly building up since then, though.
Excellent. And tell us about a week in the life of the Makerspace, or a day in the life. What's it look like out there?
We've got a whole bunch of people coming in working on various things, whether it's working on the tools themselves, fixing up the shop, or their own projects. So we've got a lot of artists coming in doing art projects, for example. That's something that'll be happening today.
Tonight, right?
Yeah, this evening we've got a really cool program coming up. We invited in a guest lecturer, Luis, who is going to be talking about how to make artist trading cards and what they're used for. It's a really interesting concept. It's a way for artists to show off their work and open a correspondence with each other on what their main themes or techniques are. It's accessible for everyone from a beginning amateur artist at home to someone who's semi-professional. There's not that many places around Juno to exchange them, but I have run into it a couple times. The Canvas had a couple of artist trading card, just casual events, just in the last year or two. I've made one or two before, and it'll be really cool to get people in on giving this a try and learning a couple new techniques. We'll be talking about a couple different ideas for how to make your artist trading card, for making them look like postage stamps, to using acrylics or watercolors or pencils. I'm planning on playing around a little bit with ink sketches this evening. I've been playing around with ink sketches of like superheroes and comic book style. It's not really something I specialize in or have a lot of experience at, so it'll be a little bit of an experiment for me.
This is something I've never done before, so I'm going to be learning from the bottom here myself. But I'm excited to learn.
So I think the trading cards that a lot of people might be familiar with are like a baseball or soccer, like a sports trading card, right? Or then there's like a business card. How are these similar or different?
The artist trading cards are generally about the same size as a standard baseball or Magic the Gathering card. They have to fit in a card sleeve, but they can be made out of any kind of material. I've run into people who make them out of glass, for example, just thin sheets of glass or acrylic. I've run into people who use bookbinding techniques, so they are multi-textural layers, but they still have to fit within the size of a standard sheet holder for a like baseball card. So they're pretty small and accessible and something you can throw together relatively quickly.
And is it, so let's say I was making one, would I make it a picture of me to give to somebody, or is it an example of my work, or can it be both?
It's something of both. Generally, this standard, I hate to say standard because this is such an individual project, but the standard format for these are your contact info and information about your works on one side, and a example of art you're working on or experimenting with or a series. For example, a comic book artist might draw a character from a larger work on a trading card as a way of advertising their style of comics. It's also used as kind of an experiment piece because they're so small. You can try things without investing a lot of time into it, which is why I want to try ink drawing style, comic book styles.
Sure. So it may be obvious, but who would benefit from going tonight, would you say?
Pretty much everyone. It's a great event for people who don't have a whole lot of experience or people who are trying to bring their art to different audiences, collaborate with new artists, and especially interact with artists in a community that's a little bit bigger. Like, there's societies that will mail artist trading cards in kind of a shuffle. So you'll get exposed to different techniques and artists that you might not otherwise see.
And it'll be going on during our weekly open studio night. So once a week, we have the makerspace open for anyone to come in, take a look around. We'll give you a tour. We'll show you all our cool tools and equipment that we've got. And usually we've got some sort of project like this going on just about every week.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about hours and entry and stuff like that.
Yeah, so we're open to the public weekly 6 to 8 Monday nights. And that's just our open studio night, maker meetup. There's always people there working on projects. And starting around 6:30, we've got all sorts of events this week. Tonight we've got the artist trading cards going on. I can read you off a list of our upcoming events here.
Next week we have costume making. I'm super excited about that. I'll be bringing my sewing machine so people have some sewing costumes. We'll also have some people available who are experienced in things like making armor or making more crafty projects. Yeah. Upcycling would be a good way to say it.
The week after that, we've got a seminar on Warbler. I've never actually used Warbler before, so I'm interested to know how that works.
I haven't used it either, but I did do a fair amount of research on it. It's another one we're inviting in a guest speaker from our own maker community who's going to come in and talk about using Warbler, which is a common material for cosplayers. It's used for making armor and other three-dimensional clothing effects where you want the end effect to be very stylized and easy to work with. You generally work with it with a heat gun. It looks somewhat like a sheet of thin plastic.
Probably good for wearable arts, just saying.
Yeah, yeah, actually it'd be great for wearable arts. It's got a lot of different applications, especially as we're coming up on Halloween. It's got a lot of applications for little appliques or accents, armor details, jewelry, things like that.
And then, let's see, we've got a workshop on steampunk props and weapons. That'll be a fun one. Also for our Halloween-themed events going on in October here, so that's on the 17th. And then pumpkin carving on the 24th, maker style. So, there's no limit to what you can really do with a pumpkin. I think just cutting out some holes and sticking a candle in, it's kind of boring for my taste. So I usually stick in like some LED lights and see what else I can get going on with my pumpkin.
I like working with layers of depth of cut instead of just cutting straight through it. Doing partial cuts so you get some light through, but it's not a full-on hole to the candle. It can create a lot more detailed images on
sure.
the pumpkin.
You've mentioned the maker community. About how many folks belong? What's it cost a person to become involved? And that kind of, tell us about that.
Yeah, we've got about 15 to 20 people who are regularly involved with events, volunteering, and members. So, we're weekly open to the public, but to get access to the space, 24/7 access to the space, it's $50 a month. You subscribe for a longer period of time, then you get a discount. But you get access to the space. You get to come in, use the tools whenever you need to, and it's access to the community of people who have all sorts of wide variety of skills and from engineering to art to architecture. It's just an amazing cross section of Juneau we have coming through the space.
It's a really important point that Sam brought up. While we're only open to the public on Monday evenings on a regular basis for the open studio, once you're a member and have gotten vetted by the community and gotten your safety training, you'll be able to have 24/7 access to the space, which is really valuable. I work for long hours, and I am often there, 2 in the morning, hanging out, working on my project.
Sounds good. Where's the best place to find you online?
Well, you can go to our website at junomakerspace.org, of course. We've also have a Facebook page and a Facebook group. So Facebook page will have a lot of announcements as to events going on, and our Facebook group will also have announcements, but also have more discussion for people who are like, hey, I have this idea I want to try out, and other people have ideas or material they're looking for their project.
All right, the Juno Makerspace, a bunch going on out there. Find them online or on Facebook. First of which is Artist Trading Cards, going on tonight from 6:30 to 7:30. Grace Amundson and Sam Bornstein, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
Go to our website. We have even more events than just the Monday night stuff going on. We've got someone's working on ham radios on Friday nights, and got a garage sale October 15th for getting rid of other stuff that other people might find useful. So there's a lot of other stuff going on too, not just Monday night's open studios.
I'd encourage people who don't even think of themselves as makers to at least come try it out on one of these Monday night events, because I think that anyone can create things, and we have all the tools and resources you need to get started. You don't need to have any prior experience.
Great. Thanks, you too.
All right, thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, September 26th, 2016. It's the birthday of George Gershwin, Brooklyn, 1898, middle child, family of recent Russian-Jewish immigrants. When his father bought a piano for his brother Ira, George sat right down on the bench and he started to play. Later partnered with Ira, wrote Broadway musicals, Funny Face, Strike Up the Band. He wrote Rhapsody in Blue and American in Paris, which became orchestral standards. 1935, he composed Porgy and Bess. It's the birthday of Thomas Stearns Eliot, born in St. Louis, 1888. At the age of 27, he wrote the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock. At 34, he wrote The Wasteland. It was on this day, 1957, Leonard Bernstein's West Side Story opened Winter Garden Theater on Broadway. Not successful at first, there were too many stories in the newspapers of gang violence, racial confrontations, so a romance between a Puerto Rican girl and a white boy did not quite click, and it was overshadowed by the success of Meredith Willson's The Music Man. Only became famous when it was turned into a movie in 1961. And it's the birthday of Jane Smiley, 1948, Los Angeles, known as the Balzac of the American Midwest for her novels like At Paradise Gate and A Thousand Acres and Some Luck. She grew up in St. Louis, an out-to-lunch child, she said. She said, I was always pretty good at school, but all I ever wanted was a horse. She grew up to be 6'2", too tall to be a jockey, set her sights on writing. Instead, she went to Vassar to make her mother happy. She said, my mother wanted me to be an intellectual. I was her eldest child, and she thought that being a writer was the best thing you could be. After college, she lived on a Maoist commune in Connecticut, then backpacked through Europe, joined the Iowa Writers' Workshop, wrote her first three novels for practice, then the big bestseller, A Thousand Acres, went on to write a murder mystery, a medieval epic, The Greenlanders, and a college satire, Moo. She said, somehow after Moo, I lost my investment in sobriety as a literary tone, and I became lively and satiric. Here's a poem for today by Patricia Farnioli, The Undeniable Pressure of Existence. I saw the fox running by the side of the road, past the turned-away brick faces of the condominiums, past the Citgo gas station with its line of cars and trucks. And he ran, limping, gaunt, matted, dull-haired, past Jim's Pizza, past the washamat, past the Thai garden, his sides heaving like bellows. And he kept running to where the interstate crossed the state road, and he reached it, and he ran on under the underpass and beyond it, past the perfect rows of split levels, their identical driveways, their brookless and forestless yards. And from my moving car, I watched him, helpless to do anything to help him, certain he was beyond any aid, any desire to save him, and he ran loping on, far out of his element, sick, panting, starving, his eyes fixed on some point ahead of him, some possible salvation in all this hopelessness that only he could see. The Undeniable Pressure of Existence by Patricia Farnioli from her collection Duties of the Spirit, published by Tupelo Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by LegalZoom, providing legal help to Americans with online services, customer support, and independent legal advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this KTOO programming is provided by Norton Gregory, area-wide candidate for City and Borough of Juneau Assembly in the municipal election October 4th, paid for by Gregory for Assembly.
If you'd like to keep up with the variety of activities, people, and events in the capital city, you want to tune into a Juneau Afternoon. Find out about concerts, meetings, events, classes, and speakers that add vitality to our community. Get to know your fellow residents. Plan your schedule. Learn what's going on and how you can be involved. Or be a part of the program by being a guest and passing the word about what you're up to. A Juneau Afternoon, weekdays live at 3 on KTOO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available on demand via KTOO.org.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, September 26, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Judy Meyer and also Ege Tezcan. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So you are here. Ege, you are a exchange student from Turkey. You're a junior at Juneau Douglas High School. How is life at the high school?
Busy.
Yeah?
Yes, because there are lots of things you can do if you have interests. I do cross-country. And after cross-country, I'm in the play, The Addams Family. We are waiting everyone in city. So I have rehearsals after cross country. Usually I go home like at 8:30, if I'm lucky, 7:30. So I have a very busy life here. I mean, I never needed a date book. Now I'm using one.
How does this compare to life back at home for you?
It was more about my classes, lessons. I mean, I was doing lots of like social studies, reading, but here it's just like more, I'm more active, like physical. Yeah.
You're actually doing social studies rather than reading about them, right? Judy, tell us about the program that EGGA is a part of and that you're a part of.
Well, this program is a State Department funded program. And the students are YES Grant students, Youth Exchange and Study. And it was an initiative of Dick Lugar and Ted Kennedy right after 9/11 to bring young people from the Muslim world. And this is our sixth year of working with students in Juneau. And the three kids here this year are 17th, 18th, and 19th in Juneau. And we don't wait for our fair share because I don't know how long we'd have to wait that before we'd be entitled to one.
Judy, what's a highlight of this program for you?
Well, they truly bring their world. And I don't have to pack a suitcase and buy a ticket and go, because you could travel but never get to know people as well as I get to know these young people. And I see the way they adapt and the way they influence this community and rather revolutionize the schools and the young people who get to know them.
Ege, what have been some surprises for you about life in America?
Surprises. I mean, families are more conservative than I wait. Yes. And high school system is very different for me. Sometimes it's more easy, sometimes harder. And it's for me, it's hard to sometimes I need public
trans.
I mean, usually in Istanbul, we use buses, metros, but here you need a car to drive somewhere, and there are buses, but they are rare. So, I mean,
and but, you live on North Douglas.
Yes, it's hard to go there. But if I would be in Turkey right now and I would live in a community in Juneau, I mean, like 30,000 people, there would be no airport. I mean, lots of things wouldn't be. I mean, it's a small city, but you have lots of things actually. But if I would be in Turkey, I mean, if you go to a small town, you can find these things in Turkey, like here.
Okay. And so let's see, you got here in early August and you'll be here until June, so just under a year. Before you go back, what are a few of your goals?
I will study for university. It's a very long journey for me. I will have two exams and I need high marks. So it will take my whole year because I will go back and exams are just 1 year later. And in Turkey, people start to study for these exams 2 years ago. Yeah, universities are free in Turkey. We don't pay for them, but if you go to a free university, you need high marks. Yes. Okay.
Judy, if somebody else in the community wanted to interact with some of these students, are there opportunities?
Well, there's an opportunity tonight.
Oh, yeah?
And when I scheduled it, I had no idea we'd be competing with Trump and Hillary. But we'll be at Northern Light Church at 5:15 to 6:15. And it was planned so that people who were working in downtown Juneau might decide they just felt like dropping in as soon as they got out of work. And people are very welcome. Yesterday afternoon, we were at the Valley Library, and there will be a lot of opportunities. But this is simply meet and greet these kids. And we also have Mahmoud, who's here from Gaza, and he didn't get here until 3 weeks ago because he couldn't get out of his country. And Donna is here from the West Bank, and she's Palestinian as well, and is from the city of Ramallah. Okay. And they have lots of opportunities, but anybody who wants to get to know them, there are always opportunities to meet them. And this is just meet and greet, but they'll be around town doing things. But families who want to connect with them, I can help them do that.
Sounds good. Ege, is there something on your wish list? So before you leave in June, of course, you'll be studying for your exams, but is there something that you want to do here in Juneau or Southeast Alaska that you haven't been able to do yet?
I haven't skied yet because okay. There is no snow yet. And I want to do outdoor sports here because in Istanbul, we live in buildings, stones. But here's nature. It's very beautiful, and it's rare. I mean, you're very lucky. I'm pretty sure about it. I mean, this place is more peaceful because you listen to nature. I mean, you can relax because you live with the nature. But I live in Istanbul. It's a huge city, and there are 60 million people. So we don't have places like natural places, natural beauty. I mean, we have history, we have lots of things, modern city, but this place is very peaceful for me. So I want to experience things I couldn't experience in Istanbul.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wish we had more time, but listeners, you can meet Ege and his fellow students who are here in America as exchange students, Judy Meyer and other folks from Juneau People for Peace and Justice tonight at Northern Light United Church from 5:15 to 6:15, one of many social events that will keep going on throughout the year. Judy Meyer, thank you for coming on the show. Ege Tezjin, thank you for coming on the show. Take care.
Thank you very much,
thank
Scott.
You.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same frequency.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS, an excursion inlet in Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.